We are breaking down all aspects of Yankee baseball. This is the Bronx Pinstripe Show with your host, Andrew Rotondi and Scott Reinen. Let's go.
What's up, everyone? Welcome to the Bronx Pinstripe Show, episode 369. Your AL East champs for the first time since 2012, baby. New York Yankees have won the division, step one in their quest. I was what's up, Scott? First of all, good morning.
What's up? How you doing? Nice little early Monday morning. Talking a little celebration, I'm getting ready. I feel like it's getting so close that I can feel it. We've been talking about it getting close for weeks, but now it's actually like it's there, baby.
Yeah,
with the fact that they've clinched, and now we're almost like setting pitchers up.
Yep,
feels good. Feels like we're getting damn close.
There's one final thing to be determined. That's home field advantage, but it looks
nip
like
in the air.
Looks like Houston is got that locked up at this moment. But I went to the game on Saturday. Yeah. And I was talking with some of the guys there, and we were, you know, the four finger celebration the guys do whenever they like hit a double or something.
Right.
We thought, we were speculating, maybe that means four goals for this year: win the division, win the ALDS, win the ALCS, win the World Series.
Yeah.
But Judge hit a double on Saturday and still held up the four fingers.
Right.
So
do you think that now that, because I saw that on Twitter as well, I've seen a couple people. I don't even remember who they were. I've just seen it in the feeds and such.
Okay. Wouldn't he have held up three fingers if that was
yes,
the case?
Yes, but then everybody would know what it was, too. So
they're still trying to sell him off, put him off their scent.
Yeah, I mean, do you think, like, these guys are on social media. They know that people are trying to figure it out. They've been trying to figure it out all year long. Huh?
Or he forgot.
No, they didn't. They just, what I think is happening, if that was the original one, like maybe that's the thing, and maybe it still is. Maybe they're just saying still four goals, even though one's there. Like in our mind, four goals, whatever. Even if that is it, like if I'm them, I'm definitely not holding up a three now. Like you guys are definitely not going to know what we're doing at this point because we've held it in this long, and I don't want to know honestly, because you know what? It's been working. So whatever they're doing, I think you guys should stop trying to figure this out and just let it be.
Yeah, well, that's not going to happen. You know, it's like you get a group of buddies and you get sort of an inside joke. And a lot of times they are born out of something stupid happening.
Right.
So we're overanalyzing this thing. They sat down in like the clubhouse meeting and said, what is our celebration every time we hit a double? Oh, we have four goals this year. Let's hold up four fingers. When in reality, it could have been something as stupid as
Luke Voit ripped four farts in a row that cleared out the clubhouse.
Exactly. Yeah. Or like someone tried to give a high five and his thumb got caught and he only gave a high four or something stupid that we would never guess. And they're like, oh, that's funny. Let's just hold up four fingers when we hit a double. So
yeah, exactly. They're a bunch of, don't forget that these are a bunch of 20-something year old men, boys in playing baseball, playing a kid's game, acting, you know, as youthful and exuberant and just having fun. That's what they're doing in there. Like if you've spent time in a dugout, like there's dumb things that happen in dugouts.
Oh, you don't say.
Absolute dumb.
You don't say. I couldn't tell after watching that celebration the other night.
Yeah, exactly. Right.
Tommy Kelly doing slip and slides and Tyler Wade dropping F-bombs on the Yes Network and them dousing Meredith with champagne and a whole bunch of stuff going on.
Nobody wants to think about it. Yeah, nobody wants to think about real life and like all those. That's probably too serious for what they were. You know, when Judge was coming up and all those other guys that were coming up with him, it was him and Tyler Austin, I think, would do it more often than other guys too. But there were some of the other AAA guys and AA guys that were sprinkled in. But on Instagram, Judge would always go in someone's comments and put like a moon, just a moon emoji.
Okay.
And
what does that mean?
I have no idea.
What did that mean?
I have no idea. To this day, I don't know. So, but I was
maybe
trying
Tyler
to figure
Austin
it out.
Tyler Austin was a big mooner. Maybe that was his favorite prank.
No, it was more about Judge. It was something about Judge. It was definitely something about Judge because a lot
he
of the guys.
One, he hit one to the moon?
No, it was more in like the context of something funny happens or they're trying to like, you know, razz him a little bit and like the moon emoji. And sometimes the players would just put the moon emoji and it's like, and it was a dark moon. So I don't know. There's definitely inside things that these guys do on social media that are their own that we will never know.
No.
Maybe somebody knows that. I don't know. But the four finger thing, maybe they'll say it at the end of the year. But I kind of hope they keep it to themselves until the job is done.
Do you think, you know, back when Back when all you got from teams was what the beat writers would write in the newspapers. So like 50s, 60s, 70s. Do you think all this kind of stuff was speculated about?
Or 80s, 90s.
Well, no. Yeah. Well, so the reason I don't say like 80s, 90s is because TV started, like the TV broadcasts were more immersive still at that point. So like in the 90s, at least, even though there was no social media,
you saw personalities.
You saw personalities more because cameras would zoom in and the cameras were higher quality than they were back then. But like, I'm talking about like way back when it was all you knew was what the guy wrote in the newspaper the next morning.
Hey there, the babe going up there with the front of the bat, and the guy's wearing a
held up four calf. Fingers when he reached second base, I tell you. Like, do you think that was discussed? Because I don't think it was.
No, which emojis he used? Probably not.
No, not which emojis he used. Definitely not which emojis.
No, because it was a different world as the, then too. Like they're not holding up. They're not also celebrating at second base in the '50s.
Holding up, like, they'd get a fastball.
Holding up holding up a high sign to the dugout and like laughing about it.
They'd get a fastball to the neck the next time up.
Yeah, in their temple, their careers would be over.
So, any takeaways from the celebration? I'm glad, like we said, that it happened after a win and not after a Tampa loss.
Tanaka
pitched well in that game against Anaheim, and you could kind of tell, like, it just from watching the celebration, the winning the division meant something, and it's something that I think obviously they had a goal of doing last year, and Boston just had a perfect year and won 8 more games than them. So to win it this year, I think, like, you could tell from that celebration and the guys that were talking and the what Judge was saying and what Gardner was saying and what Sabathia was saying, this was very important to them.
Yes, because whether the four fingers are symbolizing these you know, tick marks of their end goal, I do think that they had goals laid out, very specific goals. And number one, and people are talking about the celebration thing. Like, we've had this discussion, I think in 2016, we started this discussion 17. It's about celebrating in, you know, prematurely at different points. First of all, those were had the wild card surrounding them. This is different.
You got to go play like a division series 24 hours later. Don't get too wasted tonight.
Yeah.
This is like,
this is symbolic as well. This is like very much symbolic. I mean, they haven't had that title since 2012. Yep. They are going in there beating Boston, the defending world champions, in the division. Of course, that's going to be your first thing you have to do. You got to take care of that, because if you don't do that, then something else is going on, and you're either playing for a one-game play-in or you're out of the playoffs. So, again, a lot of symbolic things happening there. And I think the way that this season went down, like the fact that they got this AL East crown at at this point in the season, and just really took off after the All-Star break, is definitely something to be proud of. I think more this year than in years previous, because of the way that they've done it and the way that they've had all these guys step up in different times. So yeah, I think they were super pumped about it, and they should be.
Yeah, the getting mad about celebration, I'm done with it. It's,
yeah, me too. I'm totally over it.
Because at this point, we just know they're going to celebrate. If they win the division series, they're going to celebrate. If they win the ALCS, they're going to celebrate.
And not that I ever had a problem with it. I just didn't really care.
No, I mean, but so my what I remember us talking about was that we were questioning, did the 90s Yankees celebrate after every series win?
Right.
And they probably did. It just, we didn't have cameras in the clubhouse.
The clubhouse.
And we didn't have
tarped
Instagram videos up in 10 minutes.
Exactly. There was a lot of, it was probably a lot more subdued. But again, culture is different now than it was in the 90s. And the fact that digital media is everywhere and that everybody wants to see the inside, you know, look of what's happening with the guys in the clubhouse at all times. Like if the Yes Network had their way, like there would be, you know, head cameras on every one of these guys. They would all be wearing body cameras and GoPros, and they'd all be mic'd up. You know what I mean? Like, we want as much inside access as we can possibly get. But they just, and that's ramped up over the years. So that's another reason, I think, why.
I think it might be subdued after, if they do win the ALDS, I think they would do a little bit of a subdued thing, because in 2017, it was unexpected. They beat Cleveland, which was not supposed to happen. So they kind of
don't
went
set
nuts.
You're setting some expectations right now.
No, I still think they'll have champagne and they'll spray each other, but I don't think they're gonna have Tommy Canley doing slip and slides and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, probably not.
So why did the Yankees win the AL East? Well, last year they didn't take care of business in their own division. This year they went 54-20, which is the best record out of any team in Major League Baseball for in division. They went 20-0-3 in their last 23 home series. Another reason why home
field. It's pretty good.
Another reason why home field is so important. A couple of those were two game splits. So
does that that goes back to May, doesn't it?
I don't know exactly when it goes back to, but there was a couple 2-game splits and then 1-4-game split that was with Cleveland. And as it stands now, Houston does have the lead for home field because they each have 102 wins, but Houston has one fewer loss, so they have one more game to play. And if they end up with the same record, as we know, Houston wins. So the Yankees need to finish a game ahead. It's going to be tough because Houston's playing crappy teams. The Yankees seem like at least for like Tampa's trying to win these next two games because Tampa needs to win to make the playoffs. The Yankees are going with openers, and then they're going to be testing out Sabathia and Happ in the bullpen this week in Tampa. It almost seems like the Yankees are using these next five games as practice.
Well, I think that at this point, you're looking at, you know, we're going after the AL East. You're trying to win, of course. You're trying to win home field advantage, of course. And, you know, the whole narrative, 2 weeks ago was like, oh, they're not trying. They're not trying to win home field advantage, all this. The situation is no different. Still within a game, two games, you know, tied, whatever it is. It's not any different than it was.
No, they were trying. Do you see the lineup they put out on Friday night after they won?
But I'm saying, like, when you look forward and you see that Tampa is going to be gearing up trying to do this, of course they're going to be trying, but at the same time, like, you have to make sure that your pitching is lined up. You have to make sure that if anybody has any kind of discomfort anywhere ever at all, if a toenail was clipped too damn short, Judge sits. I'm serious.
Gleyber Torres is not going to be playing this week because
Gleyber Torres needs to rest his ass, rest his knee, his hips, whatever the hell it is, his hamstrings, everything.
Were you watching during that?
I thought he got
shot. What was your reaction?
The screamed no.
I screamed, oh, fuck. Leanne comes running and she goes, what happened? I was like, I think Gleyber Torres died. He's like writhing around on the ground in pain. And so many scenarios are flashing before my eyes. The trainers run out and then he pops up. And I'm like, it's just the popping up and then what you were doing 12 seconds earlier does not match up. I understand he was probably scared. He really injured himself, but
yeah, he felt something that was probably a sharp pain that could have been a number of things, but
him in the game and then they pull him. It's like, if you're going to be cautious, just pull him right there. Why are you playing around? Not that I think he got injured more, but I don't know. It's just,
I'm sure the conversation was just like, let's just get you out of the game. Like, you know, you're telling us you feel good.
He said my legs felt weak after.
He said that after the game or the next day?
That's what he told Boone when Boone pulled him. So they left him in for a couple innings. He got an at bat, and then he said, my legs feel weak.
Okay, yeah, you pull. So now the first of all, don't ever listen to a player if they're telling you they're fine. If they're telling you they're hurt, then you definitely listen to them. But if they're telling you they're fine, don't listen to them. So basically make your own judgments is what I'm saying.
Also, it's all about scenario, right? Like, if this is game 7 of the ALCS, maybe Gleyber Torres finishes that game. But if it's game after you clinch and, but it doesn't really make a huge difference, like, let's get you out of the game.
Similar to what Didi, when he made that throw in Boston and, you know, apparently tore something in his arm and then just kept playing. Didn't really say much. But again, you have adrenaline going on that time. It looked bad, but look, we've talked about injuries enough that are actual injuries. So let's just hope it's.
Let's not talk about injury scares.
Let's not get there. Let's not take it that far. Let's just hope it's just, you know, something that stays day to day. That's it. I really hope it is because, you know, he's had issues with the groin and the hip. And, you know, there's a lot of connections in there. With the hamstrings and the hip bone, or the muscles and the core and the groin, and a lot of connections in there. So I'm knocking on wood and hoping that he's all good.
What about, like, what's he sleeping on the plane to Tampa? Because
they better
get him a mattress in that plane.
They need some damn comfort in that thing. There's no pod. They need some comfort.
They need to get Gleyber Torres a Sleep Number bed so he has a comfortable night's sleep to rest that hamstring or whatever is wrong with him. And it is also the 100th year of the NFL. More than 1,800 NFL players are now sleeping on Sleep Number beds. The Jets certainly have not been sleeping on a Sleep Number bed, Scott. They're 0-3. Their quarterback has mono. The Giants have a new quarterback, so a bunch of Yankees fans, a bunch of Giants fans are excited about that. But Sleep Number is the best way to get a good night's sleep. It is so important, as we've talked about. You had a baby in the last couple years. You know how important sleep is. I've got a wedding coming up. I got nerves. The Yankees are going to the playoffs. I'm nervous about that too. I'm nervous about everything, frankly. But when you sleep on a Sleep Number bed, you get a perfect night's sleep. Sleep Number beds allow you to adjust each side to your ideal firmness, comfort, and support. The Sleep Number 360 smart bed senses your movements and automatically adjusts to keep you sleeping comfortably throughout the night. With Sleep IQ technology inside the bed, it tracks how you're sleeping so you can know every morning how well you've slept and gain insights for your best sleep. There's even analytics in sleeping now.
Yeah, you're basically sleeping with a nerd when you're sleeping on a Sleep Number bed. So experience the smart, effortless comfort of the Sleep Number 360 smart bed. Find your competitive edge with proven quality sleep from $999. Sleep Number is the official sleep and wellness partner of the NFL. You'll only find Sleep Number at one of their 575 Sleep Number stores nationwide. Find the one nearest you at sleepnumber.com/Bronx.
Sleep Number should come out with like a metric, like an XSLP to give you like how well you're sleeping so that they can get some sabermetrics nerds involved in their sleeping, in their beds.
I wouldn't be surprised if it already exists. It doesn't, maybe not talked about yet, but they could definitely get behind it.
So I'm going to give you the next minute to gloat about DJ LeMahieu's home run total for this season.
Yep. Oh, right now. Starting now.
You're on the clock.
I'm the smartest person alive. You and Frank are dumb. I basically saw the future when DJ LeMahieu got signed, and I first got to look at the player and his swing and where all these things. And I'm like, well, you know what? I didn't even know the balls were juiced at that point. I mean, that just made things easy for me. The LeMahieu's peppering right field. It's perfect. The fact that the 25. Was to right field at Yankee Stadium. I mean, it's like poetic, beautiful, poetic DJ LeMahieu season. He hit 26, so I'm sure that made Frank feel a little bit better than not just sitting on 25. I kind of wanted to sit on 25 because I felt like it would have hurt more.
And I'm also stuck on 24 for a little bit.
He was. I really was not worried. If I'm being honest, I was not worried because I just knew he was going to do it. He's that guy who's been doing it all year long. So I got to be patient. I got to be patient. He's going to be fine. He's playing. He's healthy. He had a little slump.
That's what I was saying. He's slumping for maybe 10 games. So that was like, oh, he's stuck on a home run.
But you could see it. You know, he started getting right field singles down, and then all of a sudden he's starting to hit the wall. I'm like, the home runs are next. It's coming.
Let's also be clear. Like, slumping for DJ LeMahieu is not like a 2-for-50. It was like he was going 1-for-4. So his average was like 250 for a few games.
So it's been a lot of fun watching him all year long. This has made it more fun, obviously, with some milestones along the way, kicking your ass with the 20, making my predictions, pretty much all of them accurate. And then we go to 25, which was really just a bet that I wasn't that confident in because I had some beers. And then when I saw him going on the season, I was like, man, he really could do this. I think he's going to do it, actually.
Well, he picked it up. The first month he really wasn't hitting home runs and it was not looking like he was going to even sniff 20. So one thing I'm actually interested in is how projections for next season, like what they project for some guys, because like
Andrew, we not just destroyed the reason why projections of these
this year, they have not been accurate, trash. But in prior years, they're very accurate. So this year the balls have made them not accurate. So it'll be Brett Gardner is going to sniff 30 home runs this year, okay? He's got 27.
Yeah.
He could hit 30 home runs if he has a hot 5 games to finish the season.
Yeah.
Say he finishes on 30 home runs. What are projections going to project him for next year if he plays?
Under 30. Well under
30. Under 30 or like, is it going to be like 25? Is it going to be 17? Is it going to be 12 like he normally hits?
Well, I think they're going to have to wait because they're going to have to see what the adjustments are to this ball, you know, if they're making any too. So I think.
But Rawlings is not going to divulge that information because they're not even admitting there's anything different with the ball.
Okay, behind the scenes, they know what's happening.
They're not saying anything that there's different with the ball. There's
not publicly. No, they're not saying anything out. You know, their PR staff is not saying anything. You're right, but the people who are talking behind the scenes, they know what's happening. So yeah, the projections will be lower than this year too. I don't think they're, I think they're going to throw this year out, because especially if they're making adjustments to the ball. I got to give a shout out to Joe. I'm totally going to screw up his last name. Talamo. He's been doing the DJ LeMahieu pace tweets all year long. So way to stick around, Joe. Way to be my guy. And I share this victory with everybody who has been following along, because it's been a team effort.
So the way the Yankees are setting up their rotation for this week, like we said, openers Tuesday and Wednesday in Tampa. And Sabathia is supposed to pitch in relief in one of those games. And Happ is going to pitch in relief on Wednesday, I think. So probably Sabathia on Tuesday. And then they're going Paxton on Friday, Severino on Saturday, Tanaka on Sunday. Does that indicate that Paxton, Severino, Tanaka is the ALDS pitching order?
It's definitely one of those, you know, those little breadcrumbs, those little scents on the trail. It looks like it. It looks like it very well could be. I mean, I think the way that Severino's been throwing and just
hasn't given up a run yet. He got through five innings yesterday.
He looks filthy. Like Severino.
Yep.
He looks really good. He looks 90, absolutely good.
What was it, 90 pitches on Sunday for Severino? So we are, hold on, I got to find it, because so it was 80 pitches.
It was 80 pitches, 80 pitches. Thought, yeah.
So say he goes 90 pitches in his next outing, or 95 pitches in his next
like
outing.
Like I said before, like, I don't think it really, that doesn't matter to me as much, because one, they may not get to that point, and two, if he's throwing 80 to 90 pitches, he could throw 95 pitches or 100 pitches. Or
yeah, it all depends on the situation and the stress level of the pitches, but he struck out 9 batters, didn't walk anyone. He looks exactly like Severino. We expected Severino to look from the get-go. Is how he's looked so far in his first two starts.
The beautiful thing about this whole thing is, like, yeah, he's coming back. He's back. He's, you know, maybe going to be completely stretched out and able to do what he wants. He's fresh. I mean, this dude has a live, fresh, ready to go arm. Doesn't have a wear of the season. We have arguably when everybody's healthy, the best pitcher in baseball with a fresh arm. Ready to go for the playoffs. Very good news.
If he pitches well and the Yankees win the World Series, we could look back and say, wow, that was a big blessing in disguise that Severino was shut down until middle of September.
They were talking about Sale going down for the Red Sox, it was almost perfect timing for them, because he was able to get down, sit down, not get the late stress on his arm that pretty much gets him every single year, and he was able to, try to get his arm ready to go for the playoffs. Like it was one of those scenarios with an injury. You look back and you're like, okay, that was a good thing if you're on that squad. This, when you're looking back, not to say that Yankees didn't need him or want him all year long. Of course they did, but the situation being as it is, right now we have a fresh arm and his name is Luis Severino, so he's throwing high 90s, you know. Going to probably touch 100 his first time out with the adrenaline in the playoffs. Like he looks good. He looks really good.
Looks really good. And it does line up.
I'm knocking on every single piece of wood I can find.
It does line up that he would pitch game two and Tanaka game three, which would be on the road, whoever they play. And some people are worried about that because of Tanaka's home road splits. He is now with Herman not going to be pitching. We'll talk about that whole situation, but now, Tanaka's the big guy with the drastic home road splits, and do you want to accommodate him and start him in game two? Or do you want to throw your best, like we said, keep it simple, stupid, throw your best pitchers in that order? And I think I still agree Paxton because of his pretty much whole second half.
10 in a row.
He's been dominant his whole second half. He is the sixth Yankees pitcher to win 10 consecutive starts. And he looks consistent every start out. And I understand that when all is right, Luis Severino is your best pitcher. But I can't ignore what I've seen from Paxton for 3 months now.
And but you're also splitting hairs at that point too. Like, Luis Severino is damn good. But guess what? James Paxton is damn good too. Like, James Paxton is pitching like a number one bona fide ace at this point too. So that they're 1A and B. If you're looking at both guys healthy in a year and both guys are at their peak, I mean, that's a 1A and a 1B anyway. So who cares?
No, you know what I mean? Like, no, I mean, really the only
dominant guys.
The only thing that I think it plays into here is that Paxton, in theory, can go deeper into the game than Severino.
As a, the way today stands, you mean, with the pitch count?
Yeah.
Okay. But the thing is, I don't think they're even... I mean, we're talking like one inning, you know, because they're not...
One inning can be a big difference, though. Yes, I think one inning is a big difference when you're talking about lining up your bullpen for a potential opener situation in game four.
Right, well...
Because it's the difference of maybe having to use Chad Green or not having to use Chad Green.
But you can't plan for that one inning at the end of the game. You can't say, you know what, he gives us the potential of maybe having one more inning in the seventh. That's like, if you're making any kind of adjustments off of that that scenario, you're a lunatic.
Well,
and I, you know, you're not making good decisions because you're not preparing. You know, maybe that's a scenario thing, but it's not something that you base a decision off of.
Another decision to consider is, who do you want pitching twice in the series? Unless you're going with a three-man rotation, in which case Severino and Paxton would pitch twice in the series. That means Paxton is pitching games 1 and 5. So okay. he's the twice guy.
Yeah, I think that's
cool with that.
Yes, of course I am. He's literally won 10 in a row. Guy's been dominant. To see what happens as Severino continues to progress, and if they're able to get through the ALDS, it'll be interesting to see how they treat him and you know, how he goes. Because if there's an opportunity for him to pitch on short rest at some point, which it always lays out that way, you know, your number one and two guys have the potential of pitching on short rest when you get into those 7-game series. It'll be interesting to see how they treat that.
Well, the one thing I was thinking about last night is, because their bullpen is set up to where they can deal with a 4-inning start,
right?
Short rest in 4 innings is very doable.
Yeah, well, it's, I think the bigger risk for a short distance between the two outings time frame is the freshness of the guy from the beginning, from the jump. Not as much as the distance, but how is he able to get out there and pitch from the beginning? Like, is he able to be the same guy? Is he able to have that same stuff from the first pitch? Not so much what he's going to look like in the fourth or fifth inning, but can he still give you those, you know, the beginning quality starts that you're looking for? Can he still be that same guy? That's, to me, the bigger question mark than how far he's going to go.
What's the biggest question mark in your mind with Tanaka?
It's the home run ball. It's got to be, you know, him able to get swings and misses. I want him around the strike zone getting swings and misses. If he's able to keep that ball down early and we're able to see that, I think we're good. I think there will be a lot of eyes on him when they start getting to that third time through the lineup or even before that, and to see what the at-bats look like on the second time through the lineup and what adjustments they're making. And he's going to have to – he'll have a close eye when it comes to that third time around if it gets that far.
It's how he's gripping the splitter is the biggest question mark with,
yeah,
for me.
I mean, because the ball down.
Because, but it seems like with him, when we went through his game logs a couple episodes ago, it was hit or miss. It was either he pitches 5 innings and gives up 5 runs, or he pitches and gives up 1 or 2 runs, or no runs, like he did against the Angels in the clinching game, where he pitched 7 innings and 86 pitches and looked filthy. He had a splitter from the very beginning. And unfortunately, it's a coin flip if he's going to have his splitter because of the grip on the baseball. He's experimenting. It just seems like some days he goes out there and he has it. Some days he goes out there and he doesn't have it. And I'm at the point now where I don't care if he's at home or on the road. If he's on the road, if he's at home and he doesn't have a splitter, guess what? He's going to get hit. And then what is that? Is it the splitter grip, or is it because is he pitching at home? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
People are like so concerned about these home road splits. And it's like, it's kind of a 50-50 proposition with Tanaka at this point, how he feels with the ball on that day.
Yeah, I mean, we're saying the same thing. When I'm saying home runs, that's because the ball's probably up in the zone. I mean, if he's down and early, you know, early and often low in the zone, and he's getting those swings and misses because the ball, you know, has a different path from where it's starting and it's dying down and away, then I think he's going to be good. But again, like, even if it starts off with the splitter and you know, the ball staying down in the zone, there's going to be such a close eye on him when they get through. When they're in that second time and looking to see how the at-bats are changing from the opponents, and then, you know, again, if he gets through the second time and into the third, I think it's going to be quick. I don't think they're going to let him get into much trouble at that point, especially if he's, you know, again, it depends on the scenario, depending on if he's going game two or game three and you know, what happened in front of him. Obviously, scenarios can change and make – I mean, the bullpen, if it's rested, they could absolutely – turn it into a very short start for him and then just go with their firepower.
Yeah, and I think that's what a lot what happens in game four depends on the first three games.
Right.
No, but I'm saying like if they get length out of two of their three starting pitchers, then I think they can go with an opener. Otherwise, you might have to see Hap start a game.
I don't think Hap starting would be the worst thing, honestly, because he's been pretty good as of late. It seems like he's definitely turned it around. I have a lot more confidence in him today than I did a month ago. So I think the Yankees do too, and I think Boone does as well. And I think that they see now a veteran guy who has somewhat figured it out a little bit, has more confidence, and is able to get out there and compete at a higher level.
They're testing him out of the bullpen this week.
Yeah, and they should. They should test everything. They should see what it is. You know, I don't know how much a couple outings out of the bullpen looks and feels as far as a confidence and like what you think that guy can do. I don't really know what that does.
Again,
it doesn't hurt.
It's more just so when Hap is doing it in the playoffs, it's not the first time he's doing it in his life.
Yeah, and that's good. And that's a good thing. Absolutely. And we have the luxury of doing that. That's the thing. Like getting yourself ready for the playoffs or going balls out and trying to win this home field and like, you know, making sure that you're not doing these things that need to be done because now you have the time to do those things. So what's more important, making sure that you're right for whatever your scenario is in the playoffs or, you know, throwing caution against the wind and trying to win this home field when you really can't control it either because you have another team in the mix who's winning games too against crappy teams. So look, the way that the playoffs are, obviously Boone has to have all of these different scenarios laid out. Like what happens here? What happens here? What happens here? Depending on, you know, all things go well in game one, all things go well in game two, you know, they split. How does that split look? The pitching staff, the way that they're going to use it, the way that they're going to use an opener or a bona fide starter is going to depend on.
Bona fide. Right. Do you think they're going to be using Jay Happ to start a game if they're facing elimination? Because I don't.
Probably not.
No.
But it depends on. They'll go every batter at that point if they're facing elimination.
Every pitch.
It's different. Every pitch.
They're going to have a new guy throw a new pitch every single day. Every single. Pitch, you know what I was saying.
Good
anyway,
job.
Couple
really,
guys.
That was really good.
Couple guys who are getting hot at the right time. So Judge, since August,
I thought you were gonna lead with Tyler Wade. My bad. Sorry.
You want me to lead with Tyler Wade?
No, it's just funny. It's funny that he's hot now and he's going to be on this.
The reason I was leading with Judge is because I know we're probably not going to spend much time on him, and we're going to spend more time on Tyler Wade. So let me quickly tell you the Judge stats since August 20th, which was the West Coast trip. He's got 14 home runs and a 178 WRC plus. He's been a beast. Getting hot at the right time. Love it.
Mm-hmm.
Tyler Wade, since August 21st, is hitting .355, .412, .613 with a .424 weighted on base average. He's on the playoff roster.
Oh, there's no doubt. This has been something like, I'm so happy that he's hitting right now to shut everybody up. Just because I think, to me, again, like he's hitting. That's great. That's
he's
very
still not
good.
Getting at bats in the playoffs, really.
No.
But if you have to get him an at bat, you're not like, well, crap, that's an automatic out.
I mean, maybe it doesn't matter. That's the whole point. It doesn't matter. Like it's nice that he's hitting now. It is. It's nice.
If it doesn't matter, then he should have been on the playoff roster regardless. And I think there's a couple reasons why he's going to make the playoff roster. One is he's performed over the last month. Yeah. Two is other injuries have opened up spots for him. And the outfield where he has played left field, we've seen him play center field. We know he can play third, short, and second. They need someone who they can just have on the last man on the bench to stick them pretty much wherever they need them.
Right.
But they didn't need that if other guys were healthy. There wouldn't have been a place for that. If Aaron Hicks and Giancarlo Stanton are on this roster, Tyler Wade's not on this roster.
It's so the fact that he is also valuable as a base runner, the defender, like to me, those are the bigger things. It's not his hitting. To me, him being on the roster really has nothing to do with his hitting. It's nice, but they don't care about that as much. They care that he is, one, first of all, he's playing with confidence. He's playing a lot more, too. One of the big reasons we have been talking about Wade and how he's such an anomaly and we don't really know what he is because he's had sporadic playing time, and now you're seeing him get a lot more regular playing time out there, and he's hitting the ball. So, you know, maybe he's just one of those guys who needs that and isn't really as much, or it's just an adjustment that he needs to make as he's getting older. But his value for this team as it stands with the playoff roster, And him as a player with his skill sets, it's defense, flexibility, and base running. That's it. That's the biggest thing. If he's able to go out there and have to take an at bat and get a single, great, great. He can also lay a bunt down. He's a guy that gives you some different things, different looks than I think a lot of other players do. And that's a valuable guy to have on the postseason roster. And I've been talking about this since freaking April. No, right. February.
But it's not valuable if you can rather have Aaron Hicks. That's what I'm saying.
It doesn't matter. It's a moot point because we have Tyler Wade now and we don't have Aaron Hicks. And Tyler Wade has shown one of the beautiful things that we've seen, you know, in the past 3 weeks is that he looks very comfortable in the outfield. And that's a big deal. Him being comfortable in the outfield pretty much at any position is a great thing for Judd or for Boone, because now he's able to take guys out if they need to late in the game, or you know, move Tyler Wade around late in the game to play different positions. Like he's just a nice little Swiss Army knife for him to use.
Right. So I think we're starting to, this is like the next 5 days. We're starting to see the roster come together, and every night people speculate, oh, maybe this guy's on the roster, maybe this guy's not on the roster. I think a lot of it has to do with how many pitchers they carry in the first round, because they can get away with carrying one fewer pitcher in the 5-game series versus the 7-game series. And I know we have a mailbag question about that in a second. But another thing I wanted to talk about was this ongoing Yankees versus the umpires thing. And it happened again on Friday night with Joe West making a horrendous call on Brett Gardner in the ninth inning. Should have been ball four. It was like 6-7 inches outside, and he called it a strike. And that bled into the next day when Aaron Boone was arguing with Joe West in between the first and second inning. That was the game I was at.
He wasn't even arguing with Joe West. He was just arguing, and Joe West was like, you know what? I'm old, crotchety, and I'm just going to toss you.
Well, Joe West, I think, is the crew chief.
Yeah, I know. But did you see the distance? Like, that's a long-distance toss. He was at third base.
Right, and then Boone ran out to third base. So it was hard to catch, because obviously I'm like talking to people, and then all of a sudden I see Boone in full uniform, which is weird. He was in his full uniform. I forgot he was number 17, talking to Joe West around third base. And this has been such an ongoing trend with this team this year. It's going to seriously suck if something like this happens in the playoffs. If one call goes bad in the playoffs, are we going to get a snowball effect?
Well, I mean, the snowball effect has already happened. It's been culminating for pretty much the entire season ever since he had his rampage on that doubleheader day game. But look, I mean, there's such a problem with the way Joe West handles things right now. The fact that Major League Baseball still has this guy running out there. Country Joe gotta go. Like, he's gotta go. The guy can't even move. He's hunched over, stuck on top of a Mets player. Was that Roger Davis? Stuck literally in like a horrible position on top of a player and cannot get up.
Why do umpires not have to pass physical fitness tests?
I don't know. They need to. They should pass physical fitness tests.
NBA and NHL and NFL, I know they have to do more moving around. They all have to pass physical fitness tests. But guess what? MLB umpires sometimes have to stand out in July 99-degree heat in full gear behind the plate. And we've seen this happen where they get like heat stroke and they pass out. It's because you're fat and out of shape.
You don't have to pass out to make it affected. You have to be horribly out of shape, horribly overweight,
underhydrated.
Who knows what you're drinking? You're not eating well. Who knows if you're sleeping? He probably sleeps all day when he's not umpiring, honestly. But he can't move. He just can't move. Like you can't do your job. If you can't get off of a player when you've fallen on said player, it's time to hang them up.
But it's also, you can see umpires get out of position because they're too immobile to run to the bag or put themselves in a good position where the throw is coming in from. It doesn't happen a lot, but
I mean, that strike call
but
from
point
on Gardner.
The point of I brought up is not, umpires, guess what? We've got human umpires for the rest of this season and next season and probably the season after that, but we certainly have them for the rest of this season and into the playoffs. So that's not going to change. So we can talk about robot umpires all we want, but guess what? We're not going to get them this year. There's a problem with the Yankees and the umpires this year. It is well established.
There's no doubt about it.
They've got a quick trigger.
The umpires
throwing
do,
guys
yeah.
out. So Brett Gardner gets a bad strike call in the playoffs, yells something, he could be gone.
I don't have I have no confidence in the umpires taking in the situation of a playoff game and understanding that and then not tossing somebody. Because I could see them doing something very, very emotional and erratic because of the history of what's happening here, especially if it's one of the guys that they've been into in the past.
It's not just the Yankees either. So I already know that it's going to be, the umpires are out to get the Yankees. The Astros have dealt with the same thing this year. Justin Verlander got tossed out of a game with a quick hook when he was had his back turned. I know he was yelling at the umpire, but he had his back turned to the umpire and he got thrown out. So it's not just the Yankees dealing with this situation.
Yeah, no, I just think it's more, it's everybody's more hyper aware of what's happening with the strike zone. They know the technology's around the corner, so I think it's just pissing people off even more.
Yeah, they're super sensitive about it, definitely.
Yeah, and also, exactly, and then you know that, it's being covered all over the place. It's super easy to get all these things, so it's in their face a lot. And the umpires just have, the problem, I think, the biggest problem is not even, obviously the calls on the field are a problem, but when there's no accountability, that just brings people to a boiling point, I think. The fact that someone doesn't take accountability for something that they know is and so very clear that is wrong, and they just keep going on without taking any kind of responsibility or accountability over what's happening, it just makes people more mad. And that boils up, especially when you're going through an entire summer playing in hot-ass uniforms, 162 games. You're going to get to a point where it's enough. And these guys are working their asses off, and they're getting called out because a fat guy behind the plate can't get into the right position to see a call. I mean, if you look at, I know some guys take at more of an angle than others in the way that they sit behind the catcher. But holy crap, was Joe West off center on that call? From where his angle was, that ball probably did cross the plate.
They also lean on the catcher.
It's probably heavy. Especially Joe West, he's probably putting a lot more. That's probably a third leg.
He's using a bromine as a third leg. Yeah.
It's bad.
Poor guy.
Maybe no, we know why Gary not poor Sanchez. Guy. Not poor guy.
No. Poor Romine.
Oh, poor Romine. Yeah.
Not poor Joe West.
They need to be held to a higher standard physically. You're right.
Do we know that Gary Sanchez didn't pull his groin muscle because Joe West was leaning his fat ass on him?
No, we don't. We don't know that.
Just saying.
We'd have to look back and see what the crew chief, where the setup was or the umpires. Because if it was two. Within three games, give me a three-game radius. If I got Joe West behind home plate of a Gary Sanchez caught game, it's connected.
It's connected.
It's connected. I want to know. I need to know what Joe West did the night before that game. I need to know what he ate. We need to get CSI on this.
Gary and Encarnacion are the two big injuries that we're still waiting on. And Encarnacion, they said, could be back before the end of the regular season, but Sanchez might actually not make an appearance before the ALDS.
Yeah.
Does that concern you?
I mean, of course it's concerning because that means he's not healthy enough to do it, or they're just not trying to. If they're going to test him, they have. They
know
they
get him some DH time next weekend in Texas. I feel like.
I feel like they're comfortable.
Some rust off, because then that's. You're talking about a 3-week sit out because it's 2 weeks of baseball and then a week in between the regular season and the playoffs starting.
I just think they're comfortable enough to know that he can get reps off the out of the, the regular. Gameplay and get some swings, get some live reps from guys who can throw, bring a couple minor league guys in and throw to him, or whatever it is. Some bullpen guys are not going to be on the they're not going to be on the roster. Whatever the situation is, I think they can get him ready for it. So I don't think that's as much of a concern at this point, and they're comfortable with him being able to just jump into that. So I don't think it's that big of a deal. Obviously, the health and the situation of that groin, as long as it's in a good place and he's able to do everything, you don't want a limited Gary Sanchez out there, because we've seen what that guy looks like, and that's not fun. We don't want a limited Gary Sanchez behind the plate. And even his at-bats, when you see him and he's not able to engage his core to the fullest, he's just a different guy out there.
He's so pull happy.
Yeah.
And then he's so vulnerable.
The outside
breaking ball. Word again. I can't say that word. Vulnerable to the outside breaking ball, and he has lost at-bats.
Right, and when he gets down, then you start seeing you start seeing bad at bats. Period. Right. So they need to make sure he's healthy. If he's healthy, then I don't really care if he gets in or not. I think they'll get him ready for it, and I think he'll be ready for it. He's been around long enough where he knows how to get himself ready for a game, even if he's been sitting out. So yeah,
Just as long as Joe West is not calling any games in Texas yeah. or any games in the ALDS.
Right.
If you want to go to the ALDS and you're not coming with us and you're looking for seats, or you're looking to go to a football game, preseason hockey is back. I was at a bar last week in Midtown meeting some friends, and there was a preseason Rangers game going on. Yeah. I had no clue that hockey was already starting. There's a lot of stuff to go to.
Hockey's always on.
I feel like it just ended.
It's not as many games, but it's a long season.
SeatGeek is the way to go. They prove there's a better way. Search sports, live music, comedy, and more. SeatGeek has the tickets you're looking for. SeatGeek has the tickets you're looking for all in one place. In an industry that tends to stagnate, SeatGeek decided to stand out from the crowd. They built the fastest way to find tickets so you can stop searching for the perfect seat and start enjoying it. All you have to do is download their app. They have 50,000 five-star reviews. That means they have great customer satisfaction. They pull together millions of tickets from all over the web. They rate them on a scale of 1 to 10. They also color-code them in a very easy scale to understand. Go for the green seats. Then you know you're not getting a ripoff, and you can just have confidence that the seats are legitimate. They're not overpriced. You're going to see a great game. Whatever it is. Maybe you want to go to the theater. Maybe you want to go see a comedy show. It's all good stuff, Scott.
Yeah, I've said in the past that I'm going to use it to go see Jets games. I don't think it's going to happen this year.
For cheap this year.
Well, maybe they get back all their healthy, get back their guys and the tickets will ramp up for them. But yeah, no, I've used them in the past for Jets games. I've used them to see Springsteen. I've even used them to see G-Love and Special Sauce if you go that far back and try to throw in some college bands. That was actually a college band from when my sister was in school that got me involved. So you go pretty much and you can find anything on SeatGeek. It's a great place to go. Not to mention the color coding that Andrew's talking about makes it super easy to find the good deal. SeatGeek will even give you $10 off your first SeatGeek purchase. All you need to do is use our promo code. Download the SeatGeek app today. Use promo code Bronx for $10 off your first purchase. That's promo code Bronx for $10 off your first purchase.
All right, let's talk about Domingo Germán. So I just want to, we're not going to speculate. We talked about this before we started recording. We're not in a place to speculate on what happened, especially when it's as serious of an issue as domestic violence. But I just want to run down the timeline of what we know has happened or think we know has happened. Monday, there was an incident. We know there was an incident either at late night at Herman's home or at CC's gala event, the charity event.
Or both.
Tuesday to Wednesday, the Yankees heard, quote, whispers. That was a quote from Aaron Boone that he said. Germán pitches on Wednesday in that game. Thursday, news broke that he was placed on the commissioner's administrative leave under the joint MLB-MLBPA domestic violence policy. So right. we found out on Thursday that he was placed on that, and there was an investigation. And then on Friday, he was ruled out for the rest of the season and the playoffs. There's no police report that was filed, but it went up the chains of the MLB executive branch, and they basically suspended Germán. So something serious happened, and the Yankees have put out a statement that they agree with the actions taken by Major League Baseball. So from what I gather from all of this information and the reaction of the Yankees, something happened.
Oh, yeah, something definitely happened. And, I mean, you can also look at the fact that the MLBPA did not, try to fight this at all or appeal the suspension or anything or get involved in that way, then there's something definitely that happened here. And, it's a bad scenario all around. Obviously, it's like, this is just, you shake your head at it. There's no room for this in society. First of all, there's no room for this in any place. So the fact that that Domingo Germán is disappointing. Obviously, we don't know all the information, but everybody, I think, based on what we've seen and what we know, even if there's some speculation about this and there's reasonable doubt, there's no reason for him to be playing amongst these allegations.
If you put him out there in the playoffs, that would be wrong, first of all.
Yeah.
And I think that would be detrimental to the team because that guy's got other stuff going on in his life and in his brain.
They put him on leave and I guess everything will they'll sort through all the information and figure it out. But it's a bad scenario. It's a terrible.
Don't you almost feel, because I feel kind of like I feel wrong for being like upset at how this affects the team. You know what I mean? Because like something terrible happened.
Of course.
It's hard to separate the two because you can't separate the two. The fact of the matter is Herman's a big loss for the Yankees.
Right. Yeah. So. On the mound, there's baseball implications. There's no doubt about it. And it's a weird thing to have to go into that, but that's what we're here for. It is what it is. Unfortunately, Domingo Herman, he's not going to be with the team, and who knows what happens with him.
He might not have to be the team next year. Like, this might be the end of what we see for Domingo Herman. A team might take a chance on him, but the Yankees might decide.
If there's anything like we thought, there was speculation, I guarantee you he will not be with the Yankees. There's no room for this. There's certainly no room for what
Chapman. No,
depending on what's happened. I don't know the details. Again, like there's no reason to speculate. There's no room for anybody to speculate in this until like full details are out. There's two very conflicting reports that put different scenarios out there. It's just bad all around. Bottom line, bad, bad, bad.
So we got Craig Michael King was called up to replace Herman from Warwick, Rhode Island. Shout out. Let's get into mailbag questions. The first one's about Herman, so this just goes in nicely. It's from Andrew Campbell. After hearing about the shocking news regarding Domingo Herman, how do you guys think his absence will affect CeCe's chances at making the postseason roster? Does it simply create an opening for Sabathia that would have otherwise been unlikely, or does it hurt his chances of making the roster, as there is now less of an opportunity to utilize both pitchers in tandem, with CeCe piggybacking off of Herman, Herman going twice through the order, is what I think he was trying to say.
Well, I think it's an interesting scenario that he laid out, the fact that it may hurt it, because if there's another, if CeCe were there and Herman was still on the roster, then you're definitely looking at him to come out of the bullpen and you know, do something in a short stint. But now the fact that there's not a guy that can go more distance, well, does that hurt him? Because now you need another guy that can go distance.
Right. CeCe can't do what Herman was going to do. It's not like you just trade one for one. They're different guys.
Yes.
You need something. You need what Herman can do. Who's the guy who can do what Herman could do? Or not exactly, but similar.
To that point, someone who has the potential to go distance and can get outs. Yeah, no, so I think it's an interesting scenario. I think the fact that they are trying him out in the bullpen in Tampa that announcement, and in Texas, I think that's very clear that they're looking for a spot for him, they're playing it out. I would be surprised at this point now that CeCe would not be on the roster. I think he will be on the roster at this point.
Hmm. Yeah.
Do I think it's the right decision? I don't know. I could go either way.
Well, this is to at Jason A525's question. With Herman gone, there's possibly room for two of these three: Sessa, Loaisiga, and Heller. Which two do you take? So Sessa this season has pitched 78 and two-thirds innings to a 3.66 ERA, which is very good. 4.57 FIP, which indicates that walks might have gotten him in trouble, and some other factors, home run ball may have gotten him in trouble. But so his FIP is worse than his ERA, but his ERA is good. He has long man potential. Loaisiga has not been as good in 29 and two-thirds innings, 4.25 ERA, 4.74 FIP. I see his 4.5 walks per nine innings as a huge red flag for the Yankees in the playoffs. And then Heller, he's only been in three games, but he's got high strikeout potential and the ability to go two innings.
Yeah, I think that you're definitely so. Sessa has put a lot on paper. I think he's by far had his best year. There's no doubt he's been a lot more dependable than he has in the past. There's such a narrative about Luis Sessa on social media that people hate him for unknown reasons, because I think they just can't get past that he's a better pitcher, or that he's actually he's always had a good mix. He's always had that arsenal, just hasn't really been able to put it together. And it seems like this year he took a big step, I think, moving forward. But I think Boone, as far as comfort level, if you're ranking it on that, because I think that's a big deal.
Yep.
Sessa's number one in there.
I definitely agree. And Sessa, we just talked about who can do what Herman was doing. Sessa can pitch the similar amount of innings as Herman out of those three guys.
Funny enough, they're in similar positions, a year apart, where Herman was looking to take that leap had shown some good flash and done some good things out of the bullpen. And now you're looking to him to potentially start a game or just get more length. And I think Sessa's getting to that point, not to the extent, but I think he's definitely, in a similar situation. So yeah, I think they're, when you look at the two players and what they can potentially give you, if their ceilings are remotely close, Sessa's the guy that would be there. Cause I just don't think Loaisiga has put enough on paper to show you that you could be confident. Although he has pitched a lot better recently.
4.5 walks scares the crap out of me.
Yeah. Which is funny because, you know, his MO in the minors was he doesn't walk guys.
And Heller, I know it's only three games, but he has over, I think his strikeout rate in the minors this year was like 10.5. And in the short time in the majors, it's like 11.5. He could be a short inning burst guy where if you need a strikeout, obviously he's not going to be high in the pecking order, but he can do things that Loaisiga can't do. Whereas Loaisiga is more similar to Sessa, where he's going to go further. And so Sessa is better in a longer stretch than Loaisiga, and Heller is probably better than Loaisiga in a shorter stretch. So Loaisiga is sort of in the middle, and I don't really trust him right now.
Well, I think Loaisiga and Sessa are competing for one spot, and then Heller, if you're looking for that guy, like you said, he's more of a strikeout guy. He's a guy who could come out and put out a fire, I think. And he could still give you two innings. You know, he can do that. He's done it. He's done it this year. He's done it in AAA. They've seen the length from him. So, yeah. And he looks really good right now. I mean, his arm looks live, man. It looks really good.
His ERA is high, but I didn't want to include it because it's three games.
So Heller's a weapon. I mean, Loaisiga, the funny thing is like, I don't think people realize that he throws damn near 100 miles an hour.
Loaisiga?
Yeah. He can ramp it up.
I don't care if you're walking four guys in nine innings. These guys can hit 99 miles an hour. So
it's a lot of walks.
Eric Wink at Eric Wink says, who will be the postseason X factor? Very simple. First name that comes to your mind.
I mean, I have a feeling everybody's saying the same thing. It's Luis Severino.
Yes. It's clearing away Luis Severino.
That's the answer.
Like, everyone's like, oh, what about Luis Sessa? What about Tyler Wade? Like, last guy on the No, it's Luis Severino. Do not overthink it.
Yeah, no, it's 1,000%. I mean, literally, you're getting the best pitcher back in baseball. Like, the argument is him and a couple other guys. Sprinkle in whoever you want. His name's in that conversation. And if he can come out and be that guy, you know, to complement what we've seen with Paxton, potentially with Playoff Tanaka. That's his new name. His name is not Tanaka. It's
Playoff Tanaka could be an X factor, because if Playoff Tanaka, 2017 Playoff Tanaka shows up, or what I would prefer to call him, Good Splitter Grip Tanaka shows up, well, then the Yankees have three starting pitchers. If they don't, then they have two starting pitchers, if assuming Severino's good. And that's a big difference.
I'm not going to say he's an X factor because I expect Playoff Tanaka. So Playoff Tanaka is just the guy that I think is going to roll out there.
So even if I grant you that he nuts up in big moments, the thing that's more concerning to me is sort of like he doesn't know if he can grip the ball. That has nothing to do with handling a big moment. That is like a different.
His body responds to it. No. His body responds to it.
So his fingers.
He's gonna put out the sweat glands will put out just enough to get that grip. The nail will be cut to the perfect length so that he can get that cut. I mean, it's all inclusive. It's not just it's not just one or two things. Playoff Tanaka comes to play. The sweat glands come to play. The manicurist comes to play.
Wouldn't it be funny if Rawlings just like for the playoffs supplied baseballs from 2015?
And it was everything was changed. It became a dead ball. Yeah.
Everything was changed. Justin Verlander is out there striking out like 50 guys a game.
Yeah. I think it's to more the point, the long fly balls are staying in the park.
Right. He gives up a fly ball off the end of the bat and it goes to like 270 in right field. And he's like, wait, what happened?
You start seeing ducks flying and landing in front of outfielders because they're not expecting the ball to stop.
Pitchers are out there throwing rocks. Yeah. Ted Larson, do you know what, if any, changes will go into the off-season routines of pitchers who are just now coming back? Severino, Betances, Montgomery. It seems like it would stunt their full rehab recovery process. So how do they balance that and the need to be ready for a full 2020? Arizona Fall League for Montgomery, he asks, or do they all just shut down after the postseason as they typically would and then resume normal off-season throwing schedules? A couple things. Montgomery, we haven't really heard much about since the one outing in Toronto. And Betances, this question, I think, came in before the news that Betances partially tore his Achilles.
Right.
So, I mean, that changes everything for Betances, we know.
Well, he's also a relief pitcher where I think it changes things. It's very different for him than it is for a starter.
Yeah, and Montgomery, I think he's just got I don't think they'll send him to the Arizona Fall League, but I think that he's got – he's still building up strength. He's still, like he said, I've got a new arm now. I've got to figure that out. And his goal was to get back on the mound this year, because that's a milestone for guys after surgery. And he did that.
Yeah.
And then I think he's eyeing next spring training to be ready for.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't think there's really much value, because I don't think you really stunt growth in the offseason by not having them pitch, because these guys need the rest as well. So you're also going to be getting him back into the semblance of what spring training looks like and how you need to ramp up for a season. And that doesn't mean throw all offseason to get your arm to a point, like, because then you're going to battle fatigue and potential too much stress on that arm during the season as well when you really need it. So I think that they will do a, you know, whatever.
They might have him throw during the October just to simulate things.
I guarantee he's throwing. They'll probably send him to Tampa for a little while and do some things down there and work with their guys. But I don't think it changes too much. Really, I think they're going to go through as much of a prescripted, regimented offseason that they would typically do, or maybe that plan has changed now because of their situation. But whatever that situation, whatever that plan is, I think they will implement it and just really try to get that arm as strong as possible and ready for spring training, because you have plenty of time come spring training to ramp up, and when pitchers and catchers report in February, to get ready for the season. And even if it's not something where he's totally ready, like there's time to build that arm up in the beginning of next year so that you don't have to rush it or feel like you're, you know, behind the eight ball at any point. So I think there's plenty of time for that.
And for Severino, I think a lot depends on how much of a workload he has for the next 4 weeks.
Yeah, let's hope he's working a lot. You know? Right. Let's hope he's throwing a lot.
They might be like, all right, you threw plenty, bud. Shut it down. Next, final question.
So especially with Severino, they're not gonna overthrow him. Because I don't think that's a thing. For Severino, especially a guy like, and really for Jordan Montgomery, like, these guys have gotten as far as they are. They need to be healthy and then be able to execute within spring training. That's plenty of time for them to get back on their horse.
Final question. Duncan, I'm a UK-based Yankees fan who watches as many games as we can on MLB.com and have now been to games in New York, Miami, and London. Watching the Angels series, there was a lot of talk about MVP with Mike Trout apparently leading the way. I don't understand how a player can be the league MVP when he plays for a losing team. Surely it must be a player who influences success for the team. Can you explain? Also, do you agree that DJ is the Yankees MVP, or should there be other players considered?
Okay, so this goes down, and I'm sure this is a frustrating and confusing debate, especially for newer fans or UK-based fans who don't see this every day, and really, because honestly, there's no clarity on our end either.
The writers have different opinions.
There's no actual description of MVP that says the most valuable player to the team and to their situation.
It's how you interpret the word valuable, which can be interpreted different ways.
And a lot of people, and the way that it's played out for as long as I can remember, is that the MVP has always gone to the best offensive player.
Well,
period.
It's not always an offensive player.
Usually offensive player, but best
usually
player.
Usually offensive player.
Usually offensive player.
Yeah, and that's Mike Trout every year. So it's like, but see, that's the frustrating thing for people. It's like, well, then why doesn't Mike Trout win it every year? Some years, a guy will have close to a Mike Trout year on a winning team, and then they get it. And always the argument is, well, they played for a winning team. Well, it's like, well, Mike Trout was still better. What's different this year? It's because no one had close to Mike Trout season. Mike Trout had an unbelievably huge year this year, and his numbers are far and away better, and he didn't even play the last 2 weeks.
Right. Yeah, so that's
best
the thing.
Player award, Mike Trout every single season.
And they have
it's
offensive
not a question.
They have slugger awards. They have offensive player awards. They're just not the same. They're not the MVP. They're not the hardware that you want. They're nice. You know, they're ones that you put in the garage or up in your office, but they're not ones you put on the mantle. Like, those are the big hitter awards. Those are the ones that they can really use for leverage and stuff like that as well. So until there's a clarification, which won't happen because that's just the way baseball is. It moves like the Titanic before it sank. It's slow moving, I should say. they just don't have any clarity around this. And there's no agreement from everybody who votes on what they're looking for from a candidate for the winner. You ask what the winner looks like to five different writers, you might get five different answers, unfortunately.
I've said this on shows before, but do you think that it would be better if they changed, if the MVP award stayed, but they added, say, a Babe Ruth award, similar to a Cy Young Award. Cy Young Award has to go to the best pitcher. Babe Ruth Award has to go to the best hitter. And then MVP can go whoever is the, quote, most valuable to a team's success. That can be pitcher, could be relief pitcher, it could be batter.
Yeah. Look, I definitely think there should be a distinction. I think that they should make the best offensive player more of a glamour award. I think they should have that as the guy, not just the, you know, the,
because no one cares about the silver slugger. Every position gets a silver slugger. It's not impressive,
right? I understand that, but there are other smaller. They need to make a clear distinction, because MVP, I think, as interpreted as value, is a big deal. And I think that when you see that, you look at what DJ LeMahieu did this season, and hell yeah, he's probably the MVP of the season if you're looking at value based on what the season, what the team has done.
No, there's other guys on winning teams who have done great things. I know, like Alex Bregman.
But I'm saying he's firmly in this conversation.
Sure. I mean, he's in the conversation anyway.
Not to the point where it's going to be much of a.
I mean, MLB Network puts his name, his face up there on the MVP.
I understand
graphics.
That, but it's not going to be.
He's not going to get
it. It's not going to be close.
He's not going to get it. He's barely going to. He probably won't even get any first place votes.
That's the problem. The problem is, yeah, okay, you're talking about it, and you're putting his name on the graphics and stuff, but it's not really a consideration. It's Mike Trout. He's going to win because it's the best.
I don't really have a problem with it because Mike Trout's ridiculous.
No, it's not having a problem with it. It's just, can we just be clear on what it is? That's all. Let's just be clear on what it is. And today, the way that the award's given out, it's not given out to the most valuable player for a team and how they affect a given team's performance. It's who's putting up the best numbers. That's how it's interpreted today. So right. It's confusing for a lot of people, I think, that are either more casual or who are, you know, newer to MLB. But sorry, all right, Duncan, I wish we had a better answer.
That's it for mailbag questions. Submit them at bronxpinstripes.com/podcast, or you can tweet us and Instagram us and Facebook us and all that kind of stuff. Rate and review the podcast. We got a lot of episodes coming up with, hopefully, a deep playoff run. There'll be one episode for every playoff game. And till then, we're going to be doing our normal Monday to Thursday schedule, but we had some people ask on social what the plan is for the playoffs. So they play, then we record. That's how it goes. We've got voicemails to end this show. Call up the line, 646-480-0342. There's a lot of stuff that's happened with the celebration and different problems with people and pitching injuries and almost injuries, so it should be a good batch of voicemails. Any final words?
You're going to get a lot from us during the playoffs. We're going to a lot of games this year, too, so we have don't expect the exact same audio quality. I'll put that out there because I'm a stickler for a lot of this. We do have some damn good mics that we have gotten that will be good for out in the field, because we are probably going to be recording on a park bench outside Yankee Stadium
for some of the games. Other games, like, will be
the games
normal,
that we will be at. We will most likely in our be apartment, recording my apartment. From park bench. So we'll do anybody who's coming out to spill out. We could get a live show going. Outside one of the playing fields, one
great.
Of the practice fields.
We'll just
fields
say a park bench in the Bronx. Good luck finding it. It's like La Bodega. Good luck.
Exactly. Go find it.
All right. We'll talk to you on Thursday.
Believe it or not, George isn't at home. Please leave a message at the beep.
I must be out or I pick up the phone.
Where could I be? Believe it or not, I'm not home.
Man, I feel so bad for Betances. His walk here, he did his this. What a crappy year. Put him in a bad position. But hey, Sevy looks like Sevy, and that's the biggest thing, the most important thing. We'll be number 28.
Yeah, this is Matt from Florida. Sevy just pitched, looked great. And then, Betances, partially torn Achilles, heart is broken. One of my favorite pitchers. You know, we may never see him again in Yankee uniform. It's a little tough. I wanted to see him in the playoffs so bad. That's a nightmare this season. For injuries, has been a nightmare. I don't know what to chalk it up to, but on the brighter side, 99 wins. Let's keep it rolling.
We're not dousing ourselves in champagne, but we're dousing ourselves in Labatt Blue Light, baby. Go Yankees! Happy clinching the AL East. Woo!
Hey, you already know. This is Enrique, captain of the BP crew, South Florida. Man, our boys are right back at the top of the AL East where they belong, baby. And we ain't done. Y'all better get ready because the Yankees are coming, baby. Chase for 28. It's happening. Yeah.
AL East champs, let's go. Sevy, Paxton, Tanaka, our pitching rotation is going to carry us to the World Series. Game over, 20th championship. Can't wait. See you at Game 2 of the ALDS with the Bronx Pinstripe crew. Let's go, Yanks.
I tried this once already, but my phone died. But I'm doing it again because we fucking did it. DJ hits a bomb. Fucking flaming pile of trash. Clint Frazier hits a bomb. We're just hitting bombs all over the fucking place. Guardy hits a bomb. Let's not even talk about Guardy hitting 100 fucking bombs at like 107 years old. Not even gonna talk about that shit. Everyone's hitting bombs. JJ's popping champagne. The fucking clubhouse is popping champagne. We did it, guys. Day late, but we fucking did it. Let's go. Next stop, October 5th. Let's do it.
2019, baby. Let's fucking get it. First time in 7 years. Let's fucking go. Go beat everyone's ass. Bring home the fucking championship, baby.
Wow! Let's go! New York Yankees, baby! Woo! AL East champions! You already know! Let's go! Woo!
New York Yankees are AL East champions. Let's get it. No Machado, no Bryce Harper, the most players on the injury list. Let's get it. Da-na-na-na. Spreading the news. Da-na-na. Let's go, World Series, baby!
Hey, dude. It's Dinko from Croatia. Yankees champions, dude. Dude, you see Tanaka time? He throw the ball, he sinks? Yeah, man. Going to win the world title, dude. Oh my god. I ordered pizza with pepperoni to celebrate the win. Go Yankees, he's Dinko, dude.
Smell you later, Boston and Tampa. We are on to October.
What's up, guys? Tyler Danker here, former intern of the BP show. Had to get on the flip side of this voicemail line after tonight. AL East champs, baby. First time in 7 years. After all the injuries this team has seen this entire year, what an unreal accomplishment. All the way from DJ LeMahieu having an MVP caliber season, all the way down to Kendrys Morales and everybody in between. So much to celebrate, so let's celebrate tonight. But listen, we're not done yet. Got a lot of work still left to do. Got a lot of unfinished business. Let's keep up this same energy going to the postseason, baby. Let's go, Yanks.
Let's go, Yankees! All the way, baby. Let's go!
Yo, Red Sox fans, how's it going? Where's all the trash you was talking to last year? Yeah, how about that AL East championship right in your face before you even won it last year? How about that?
Hey, guys. Thanks for listening to the Bronx Pinstripe Show. Make sure you find us on iTunes and subscribe so you can get all new episodes directly onto your phone. If you do like the show, we'd love for you to take a minute and give us a 5-star rating and review in iTunes. It really helps us out and allows us to create more shows. We're on Twitter at Bronx Pinstripes and the same on Facebook. You can always find us there talking Yankee baseball. Thanks again, guys, for your support. Really appreciate it. And go Yankees.